Episode 60. This is part two of a discussion that started in episode 59. And today's episode, we continue that conversation alongside myself, Lyndon, and Martin from JPS Education, which is based out of Melbourne, Australia. And JPS is one of the world's top education companies within the fitness space. And Lyndon and Martin act as the manager of education services and education coordinator, respectively, which is no small feat with the caliber of information that these guys produce on the scale they produce it. We have a lengthy, nuanced conversation over the pros and cons of imposter syndrome. We do touch on a few other notable topics. I go on a few rants as usual. And thankfully, I have Lyndon and Martin there to rein me in and keep things on track. So very appreciative of these guys. But again, the main theme here is around the nuances within this rather hazy topic of imposter syndrome. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that we can use? And is it something that our current landscape is creating more vulnerabilities within? These are kind of the things that we discuss. Again, this is part two of two. If you guys enjoyed the episode and would like to support the podcast, I would ask for you to please head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and or wherever you listen to podcasts these days and leave us a five-star review and tell a friend about the podcast. If you're from Instagram, what's up? Thanks so much for hopping platforms and joining us here in the podcast world. If you can, share a screenshot of the podcast on your story. Be sure to tag myself at Austin Current and be sure to tag our guests at Mr. Fitness. There's a couple underscores there if you can't find him. That is Martin. And Lyndon's username on Instagram is at l.j.purcell. And as always, enjoy the conversation. And I want to pose a question after my soapbox there. I want to pose a question to both of you. And I think at one time or another, and I'm reading this book called Transcendence. It's written by Scott Barry Kaufman. It's basically like the new take on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which it's interesting to learn that Maslow never drew a triangle and that he never had a pyramid. And it took some guy in marketing at some agency to take these concepts and put them in this pyramid. And now that's how we've learned them forever, which is just hilarious. But it represents a lot of what goes on and a lot of how information is represented depending on where you're looking. But basically in this, he kind of discusses this kind of concepts, but it's kind of about imposter syndrome, and it's about, and I think a lot of people are, I think we've all felt this at some point in our careers, and we at different point, I definitely still have it at certain points. And he draws a parallel to the ego, or bits of narcissism within this, which we're all narcissists to some degree. But I think our current culture, the way we're headed, leaves a lot of vulnerability to imposter syndrome. Because, and I say this from the what we were talking about towards the beginning, and how people are acquiring knowledge, their motivations for acquiring knowledge, and how they're then sharing that knowledge to gain authority and respect and clout and clients and money and whatever, reputation, you know, you name it. But when you're put into a room, and we've all shit our pants in these scenarios, at least I'll try to speak for you both. Like, I know I've shit my pants. I've been in a room, you know, you find yourself in a room with people way smarter than you, and you're like, fuck. Like, I don't know. I hope I'm not asked any questions, you know? When in essence, like you got your shit together. And I think there's something to that, feeling that, or this being scared to some degree that you may experience that. So you really get your shit together. You're like, okay, you know, I got to be prepared for this moment at any point. But I'll get to the final point here and kind of let you guys expand on this, but we're headed, I think we're in a very vulnerable place right now in the way that people are consuming information. I think the way people are then creating information, and building a building businesses, building brands, building reputations online, to then being very limited, and so which they actually know that information. And coming back to, I think we're in a very vulnerable state to have a lot of people who are may have the insecurity of imposter syndrome. And so if there's advice that you guys, you know, I'm going to assume there's some people listening right now that have felt this or are feeling it right now, and or are going to be scared of feeling or being an imposter in their space. And so, you know, ways of learning information in a way where you can sort of ensure that you're starting off on the right foot here, or kind of maybe auto-correct your path, if you will.
Yeah, I think, for starters, I'd just like to make the point about your own sort of, your own self-depreciating humor a little bit about like getting off your own soapbox. Like I know we've spoken about this in the past, Austin. It's like, we would love for people to adopt the skill of listening to a greater extent. And you shouldn't feel pressured to quickly round out your thoughts. Like it's very often those tail end thoughts when someone has felt the freedom and the space to speak openly that you really get to the point. Like it's a skill in and of itself to get sort of the most of your wisdom out in a compressed manner. But typically I think it's the people that can do that don't tend to possess the most wisdom overall. And the more willing you are to just give people space and comfort, like the more you will learn from them, the more you'll connect with them, obviously. And that really is not going to lead you too far astray. I think that's important. The thing I'll say in regards to imposter syndrome, or maybe I'll start on a slightly different point. I think one of the moral, like the guiding principles that I try and live my life by, and it's not something I do perfectly, not at all, but I really love, I think it's Warren Buffett's basically advice he gave to the companies that Berkshire Hathaway owns, that was basically like, he doesn't micromanage the companies that Berkshire Hathaway acquires. It's, you know, we go after good people who run good companies and we let them do their thing. We get out of their way. The only advice we give them is like, behave in a manner that as if whatever you did was going to be printed on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow. And I really just don't think there is enough of that. And morality is actually a long-term game. Like it is, people don't see the value in it because they see the immediate value that they can pinch off if they forego some kind of moral framework. Oh, if I just do this, like it'll get me to here and then I'll start acting like a good person, or I'll do that and this. And it's like, unless you start acting like a good person right this very minute, you are actively making it more difficult to begin acting like a good person in the future. Like you are ingraining the habit of rationalizing not being a good person. And I think the industry is going to catch a lot of people. I think every industry, like that's not to say anything, like there are, you know, it might be tomorrow that the news breaks that someone we looked up to was XYZ, like that, you know, the same sort of thing happened with Harvey Weinstein. Like now there's Ellen DeGeneres and all these things. It's like tomorrow you might be the one that's on the front page of the newspaper. And that's very worrisome and scary. And to be honest, like that's not a bad thing. Like if you weren't worried and scared about that, you might be causing a lot more harm to others than you should be. And I think that sort of links in a little bit with the imposter syndrome thing. I think there's a lot of speaking to the point of imposter syndrome about, like, don't feel like, you know, you're an imposter and blah, 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 like that in the fitness industry. And some of it's definitely warranted. I'm not saying that, but I think a lot of it is people trying to create a bit of an atmosphere that makes them feel more okay about their own probably extent to which they've extended beyond or like maybe being an imposter. I don't think there is anything inherently wrong with imposter syndrome. If it makes you sort of not cover your tracks, but like cover your bases, like ensure you are actively learning and not just relaying information for the purposes of manipulation. And as you said, like there's always going to be a narcissistic basis to anything. There's always going to be a selfish basis. Like this is arguments and discussions that I've had previously that it's like, I don't think there is anything such as like a purely unselfish act. Like to be unselfish, you can't have a self that actually is there to commit the act to begin with. Like you need a self to do something that resembles something unselfish. But just because you can't have something in its purest form doesn't mean you should justify the complete other end of the spectrum. You still should be looking to act in a relatively, mostly unselfish way, hopefully, even if you have the premise of you can't act unselfishly in its entirety. So I think the same sort of principles apply there with imposter syndrome. It should, for the most part, I think should push you back towards a good framework for operating. I would be very, very hesitant to completely cast it aside as an unhelpful mindset. But the thing I will say is it's all about how you qualify these things. Something that I hope has become a greater or more prominent theme in my work of late is I'm putting this out there very much for the process of learning via constructing it and via the feedback that I'll receive on it, not look at me, I'm the expert on this topic. And I think that's definitely more so and sort of speaks to the point that Marto made earlier is like, that's how we all sort of start our careers where believe like when your ego is sort of at its most fragile point, you construct this big sort of bravado around it in order to like, oh, dare, you know, God forbid anyone sees behind the curtain because like there is actually nothing to see here at the moment. And I think the more you become secure in sort of what you know and obviously need to be, as you said, like you need to be careful of not telling yourself this narrative that you're actually, you know, getting rid of your ego while you're actually stroking it with the other hand. But I think you will never be misleading anyone or feeling like you have imposter syndrome to a significant extent if you are just qualifying why you're putting something out where you're not sure if you know. Just like all it takes at times is like, you know, a sentence at the start of an article or a sign off at the end of a podcast being like, hey, this was just my thoughts. Please let me know if you disagree or if I've missed something. Like I haven't intentionally misrepresented anyone. And I think just the other thing that I would say is having some faith in people who are receiving the information. I think you need to have some trust that people won't just go you entirely for something that you mistakenly say. Like we had a presentation on the weekend, Marto and I and a few of the others, and I got a little bit confused at the first start. Like I confused myself at the start of my first day's presentation. And it tripped me up a little bit. And there was some feedback on that. It was just like, oh, you know, Lyndon seemed like he confused himself a little bit at the start. And like that's the feedback was certainly warranted because I did. The point I'm sort of getting at is when you listen to a podcast or you read someone else's article or you watch a video of them, please do be aware that like, don't worry, they remember all the things they forgot to say about 30 seconds after they didn't say it. Like, I think we just, like, presenters and information conveyors need to have a greater respect for their audience and not treat them like they are some, you know, number on a, you know, an Instagram profile, as you said, and, or, you know, their ticket to the Lamborghini or whatever it is, like social prestige, you know, sort of however you want to conceive it. And when that is actually done, maybe the audience in turn will give them a little more space to make mistakes, and we will have this sort of more congruent relationship going on. But honestly, like, I think that, yeah, it really goes about how you construct the audience that you have. Like, I have, as I've said before, like, not a large amount of followers at all, but man, I cannot keep up with my messages. Like, that is one reason why I'm fearful of growing anymore. I feel like an absolute ass for not replying immediately, but it's like, the things that I present and write that make you guys so happy, that I love hearing about, it actually takes me time to go away and read and learn and do them. But that's an awesome metric for me. Like, I love the fact that people are so, like, appreciative of it. So this idea of, like, these really vicious individuals or audiences and annoying DMs, like, I guess maybe it probably happens when, you know, as you scale, but I think it really just does depend on, hey, if you're one of those guys playing the quantity game, not the quality game on social media, like, that comes with a specific set of consequences, and it might be a fast road to the top, but it might be bumpy once you're there. Yeah, I guess that's not entirely on the point of imposter syndrome, but I guess it's my thoughts around the topic a bit.
Now, before Martin, before you go, Lyndon, I want to highlight as well, like, I think you brought up a couple of great points that I want to kind of draw out of that. One, it's important, I think, you know, I think I positioned it, I framed it in a manner that any imposter syndrome is bad, because that's definitely
I wasn't suggesting you're saying that.
No, I know. And so we'll clear the air. No one's suggesting anything here. But I want to draw it out for the audience. You know, those that are choosing to stay with us here in this time. It's important that I think there's a level of, you know, there's an importance, there's a level of the self, there's an importance, there's a level of the ego, there's an importance to the level of narcissism we have towards ourselves, like, and towards the information, like, towards what we want, because then that allows us to then show up and then emulate these actions of unselfishness and just as you said. And so I think it's important that we have this, and, you know, maybe I didn't frame the question very well. And just like you said, like, we 30 seconds after we may have rambled on, or 30 seconds after we have said something that we know, you know, as I sit here and try to scramble my thoughts, I'm just glad you two are here to coherently put something together, right? And I'm very fortunate to have you both on here speaking, because you're both doing a phenomenal job of putting these points out. So whereas I feel like my mind is everywhere at different points, right? And we all have these moments, right? So, like, whether you're, you know, presenting at, you know, your presentation over the weekend, like, we all have that for sure. And the second point, let's see if I can remember it. I can't remember the second one that I was going to bring up. So I wanted to bring up the sense of having that imposter syndrome is good in the sense that it gets us to where we want to go, right? And it can keep us on the right track and keep us motivated to sort of keep up with that as we go. And I think where I see the vulnerability is that the imposter syndrome isn't going to come as much from that as it is coming from the place where they've been misled on what is a good way to learn information, what is a good way to acquire it, synthesize it, make sense of it, and then project it out into the world, whether that's to their clients, to their social medias, or to anyone that they are essentially educating. Right. And I think, you know, that's an important distinction within this conversation. And so to that point, I think it's important to have that level of imposter syndrome that we all sort of in this conversation right here, all we're almost work off of, right? Like, you know, I'm working on a book, and the level of push, the hours upon hours upon hours of research I do every single day is so, I'm sending it out to the people who are smarter than I am, who I feel as if they should have written this book sort of situation. And I'm like, hey, can you read this? Cause like, I feel like I just went into like this 6-hour sense of research and flow state of trying to get my points across. But I sit down the next day and I read it and I'm just like, I don't know. Can you like, just please fact check this, make sure it's right. But what's keeping me going on a daily basis is like, there's that level of imposter syndrome for like, when this thing, when you put it out into the world, like, I just want it to be good. And I just wanted to for guys like you to read it and say like, yeah, this was well written. Like he did his homework and he made some good points. But it's so funny to then kind of peel back that curtain, right? And like unveil, like this is what we're all, you know, you guys can speak to your own experiences, but this is what we all go through. You know, for those listening, like that feeling of imposter syndrome is real to, I think, at all levels. And I think, you know, you speak to a guy like Eric Helms, like, you know, I think there's a level to him. He just becomes this, he just wants to be the smartest dude in the room. And I think a lot of that too is, you know, I'm not going to speak for him in this regard, but the way I observe it is it's to fight against that level of imposter syndrome so much that he becomes, he chases that so hard that then he is, the byproduct of that is he's the smartest person in the room, right? So there's positive things that come out of this, and it's being able to channel it in the right ways. And so what I was speaking on towards this, the way that people are currently being rewarded on how they're learning the information or presenting the information, I think it leaves the vulnerability for people to reach a point of feeling very insecure and like they are an imposter in a space where they've been misled up until the point where then they then realized, holy shit, I don't know what I'm talking about. And it's like a deer in the headlights moment where you're like, you get into a room with people who are smarter than you are, at least matched in other areas, and then you're then tested. And if you don't have the ability to then understand, or if you don't have the ability to then to make lateral connections through experience and actually knowing what you're talking about or learning what then they're talking about in that moment to then cross it, or make a bridge to then what you understand, you're in trouble, man. Like you're going to be up shit's creek. And so I think I was speaking to that vulnerability more so than just the sense of imposter syndrome is a bad thing to feel, because I don't necessarily think that. And I thought when you brought that up, I wanted to highlight that, because when you brought that up, I was like, damn, I didn't actually ask that. I didn't actually frame that correctly. So I wanted to kind of, go on record and sort of clear that up. Because a certain level of imposter syndrome, I think we spend a lot of time thinking about what we shouldn't be thinking about, you know, like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling this. You know, I shouldn't feel this way about that. I shouldn't be thinking about this. Like I should just be able to just do that and do that. And like, I think we think about these things for reasons. You know, and I think there's an underlying motivation. There's that underlying biological drive of us all being imposters in some way, shape, or form. You know, whether that's a survival technique of our ancestors in that regard, but we're in a new landscape, right? Like these ancestral bodies are in a new environment, and these problems are new. Old problems, new situations, essentially. So I just wanted to kind of reframe that. I don't know what the second point was, but Martin, what are you thinking? What's on your mind there?
I think that's actually a really good segue for a few of the points that I'll make. So if it wasn't for the imposter syndrome, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at now. Like Austin, you spoke to, you know, like the hunger you see in me. And I think that all started when I first joined JPS and I realized that, you know, there's so many other people out there who possess such a great, you know, degree of knowledge. And I actually thought, you know, when I was working as a coach in my early years, like my confidence was quite high. I was experiencing, you know, the Dunning-Kruger effect, which we're probably all aware of. And I thought I was, quite like competent when it came to my knowledge. But then it wasn't until I was exposed to JPS that I started to realize, you know, hold on a second, I've really got to have to up my game here. And you also mentioned, Austin, that many people aren't sure how they should go about upping their game when it comes to learning. And I guess my first point of call was to just focus on building my intelligence. Now, the thing is, at that point, I only saw intelligence as being like how smart you are on paper. Like, you know, what do you know? How many questions are you able to answer? That's what I viewed as intelligence. Now I realize that, you know, intelligence can be broken into many different categories. Like, you know, we have aptitude, which is our natural ability to be good at something. We have rational thinking, so the ability to like solve problems, think critically. And then we also have like, you know, how smart you are on paper, and even emotional intelligence. And that's something, these are categories that I wasn't really aware of back then. So I spent, you know, numerous of hours like reading textbooks and trying to build my level of intelligence on paper, but I did get stuck on the level of information. So what I mean by this is I was gathering so many different data points and building this database in my head, but like I mentioned already, I was not able to progress that further and combine all this information into actual knowledge that I could use on the gym floor. So like you could say my intelligence was increasing, but only certain areas of my intelligence were increasing and other areas were then lacking. But that obviously limited my progression because I wasn't able to combine all those data points and information and build upon it. And now I realize that, you know, what I should be trying to do, and I've only started to really get better at this as I've actually started learning about topics other than fitness. Like you mentioned, Austin, you know, your traveling really opened you up. And as I started to step out of the fitness realm and learn about other, you know, areas and other topics, I've started to be able to kind of string things together in my head and get to the point where I feel like I have wisdom about a certain topic. And what I mean by that is I can kind of extract the required knowledge from my head about a certain topic and communicate it to an individual, but not really overwhelm them with information. So I'm trying to teach them what they need to know as opposed to what I think they should know. And that's what I was doing in the past. I was just, you know, teaching these students, teaching people in general, even throughout presentations, you know, what I thought was just cool information. Whereas now I can kind of distill the knowledge in my head and just extract what I think these people should actually be learning. So this kind of all started with, you know, me experiencing that imposter effect and spurring me on to become, you know, a better coach, a better individual, like just a smarter human being. And as that journey started to kind of unfold, started picking up on other things that I needed to kind of incorporate into my learning experience. Like I mentioned, all the other components of intelligence. And I started to, you know, respect the importance of learning about topics that weren't just fitness related. And Lyndon was actually, you know, one of the first people to kind of teach me about the importance of, you know, learning about communication, for example, which you know, I thought that just knowing my shit, essentially knowing, you know, about fitness and understanding as much as possible about certain topics would then lead me to being able to communicate it quite effectively. That isn't necessarily the case. And it wasn't until I started branching out that I was able to develop a much better skill set when it comes to, you know, deciphering knowledge in my head and then communicating it really efficiently and really well. And one of the things that's helped me along the way, and this is, I guess, a strategy that I implemented quite some time ago, was just selecting like five core values that I thought represented me as like as a coach, but also as a human. So like you said, Austin, obviously we're coaches, but first and foremost, we're human. We need to learn to just exemplify ourselves in that manner. And I think selecting like five core values that you think do that, and then focusing on, you know, displaying them day in, day out, making sure you're every day upholding those core values, can really keep you on track and make sure you're progressing and in the right direction. I think that's what's really helped me over the years. Is like I've picked these five core values, and they've changed along the way. And you know, these values should also feed into your philosophy as a coach or as just person in general. And your philosophy should also kind of change over time as you progress. And the way I see it is like philosophy should be like a river. Like a river doesn't change at right angles and doesn't go from one direction to another. It just slowly, you know, flows like that, and it kind of molds into your progression as a human. So all I'm trying to say here is that your philosophy should change over time as you progress as a human, and so should your core values. And that's really helped me stay on track and push to become, you know, a better coach, better person, and, you know, now, you know, becoming a little more of an expert in my field and not being as affected by the imposter syndrome as I was, you know, years ago, although that still, you know, creeps in here and there. Like you said, it's probably something that we'll never actually be able to step away from. But that's, I guess, the advice that I would give for, you know, individuals who feel this way. You know, it's probably important to understand that this is normal, that we all feel it. And I guess, yeah, just coming to terms with the fact that building your information base in your head isn't going to really overcome the imposter syndrome. So there are other avenues that you need to kind of look towards addressing to overcome the syndrome, and just understanding that you probably never actually, you know, overcome it. Like I said, it'll probably always be lingering.
Yeah. I that was incredibly well said. A way of thinking about this, I got this from Elon on his second podcast on Rogan, but I thought this kind of sparked a thought in my head when he said it. And, you know, the way that information or we gather our information lives on any given topic, especially within the fitness realm, right? Let's say if a client comes to us and asks us a question, we, in terms of our long-term memory, we have these series, just endless zip files in our mind. And at any one time, you say anything to me, like you ask me any sort of question, I'm going to go in. As you're asking it, I'm sort of subconsciously going into those zip files and searching, kind of like on the search tab, sort of searching through those files. I'm starting to type in keywords and like I'm trying to piece together things that I can then send you. How can I put this into its own zip file and then send it to you? That way, when you get it, you can open it and everything that you needed to know from this is in there for you to download. And I think that's something that we all do, are trying to always achieve greater retrieval skill in putting together these intricate zip files for people. And that's why I think presenting to the larger the audience, the harder it gets to actually shine through, because it's an endless zip file and there's endless amounts of documents within these, or PDFs and videos and things we're just piling in based off of what you're trying to say. And I just thought that was, and I've been really thinking about that a lot when, you know, whether it's something I always try and do, which has helped me considerably, is when someone asks me a question, and I get a lot of, fortunately, I get a lot of questions from people. I spend a lot of time outside of fitness, which to me is a blessing. And a big part of the name of this podcast is Life Beyond Fitness, because I think the end goal, obviously the goal of this is to speak to a lot of people that I look up to, or colleagues within the space that I really find valuable, to speak to other coaches and people who are wanting to get into this. And I always want that undertone when they come to the podcast and return back to the podcast. I always want that undertone to read. It's Life Beyond Fitness. Like, there's a life that's beyond this that contributes directly to it, and it makes you better for it. And every time I get a question, right, you're going into those zip files and you're almost asking yourself, how can I put this? You know, like we all say, like, how can I put this that you're gonna get it? So you're trying to draw back. You may ask them more questions, or you're trying to draw back of what you know of these individuals. You know, okay, I know they kind of come from this background. Okay, they probably spent time doing this. Okay, so have you heard of this? Or do you know what this means? Or have you ever done this? Or have you ever thought about that? And like you're trying to just retrieve all of these files and put them into this giant zip file, or the most concise, specific one. Like you said, Martin, like not all the things that you think they need, but all the things they actually need to know to get them closer to that end goal that they're striving for, that truth, right? Going back to that capital T on truth. It's just everyone's searching for that truth. And we're all just trying to help people along the way in our own little spaces to make this life a little bit more, whether bearable, more livable, with less insecurity about our physical appearance, and just more control over things that we don't find to be difficult, but almost endless amounts of people do on this planet. And so, you know, we're trying to just constantly create these zip files for people in each one of these conversations. But I heard him say that, and I'm just like, it opened this vast thought pattern in my brain. Like, things just were going nuts in my head. And I'm just like, you know, one of those moments we have, you hear something and it just clicks and you're like, dude, yes. I never knew how to say that, but that's exactly what's occurring. You know, we're just creating these based off contextual questions and based off individual questions and concerns and feedback, or those moments where people's blood pressure would go up when you say something, right? So like, now you have to go back and but then there's that point, the creating these zip files, that I started to think more about, that you have to be careful what you put in there. Because if you put more in there, and this is where, you know, obviously this podcast is very long form and we're talking through nuanced things, which is the point of it. But, you know, like something I always strive for, and something that I think shines through at least most of the time on my Instagram, I'm very clear and very concise, and I'm very to the point. And if I'm answering, you know, questions on my stories or whatever it is, I'm not too nuanced. I lay it out. Like, this is, I'm trying to put the things that are needed within that zip file, in that zip file, and nothing else. Because I've coached and I've educated alongside a few individuals who forget that concept of the zip file. They forget, and again, like I just learned this, but the rationale stays true, right? Like the rabbit holes, the tangents, the off the point, completely off the point. Like if you're in a seminar and someone asks a question about the back squat and you're going off onto like God knows what, right? 7 minutes in, and they're just like, dude, I just wanted to know about what's happening at the hip and in high bar and low bar squat, man. Like, I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about anymore. Like, everyone's confused, right? And like, that wasn't a good experience for anyone, right? So it's always kind of returned back. But I just did it to this conversation. But the main point is these zip files exist, and the way that, no matter, you know, almost in any social interchange, but especially as coaches to your clients, they're asking you a question and you have to gather this information, zip it up, send it, condense it, send it over. And as soon as they're opening it, you have to be sure there isn't too much in there. So where they're just clicking around and are there so much that they're just overwhelmed as soon as they open it. Because we've all gotten those zip files that are just like, fuck, where do I start on this? You know? And that's defeating. And that's coming from people who consider meta learning, right? We're considering these nuanced topics of like, we're interested in learning how to learn, right? But that's not the 99.9%. Like, people that come to you for coaching aren't, you know, they're probably not trying to like consider meta learning about the information that they don't even know about yet, right? So just give it to them, and be careful on what you include in those zip files before you send them. But I just wanted to put that together. And I don't know if you guys were listening to that podcast or kind of heard Elon say that, but I was like, that clicked for me.
Yeah, I think that's, I love that dialogue with Elon as well. I think he's a fantastic thinker, and I think someone we should be paying significant attention to. I think the word that really sticks out for me is just like the compression of information. Like, you know, and this is, I think, one of the important things to understand, just with any sort of communication medium, is that like you take, and this is like the point you're effectively getting at, but it's like the important thing is the thought in someone's head, but it then gets compressed into words, into a sentence, into, you know, characters on a page, and then it gets plugged back into and received in someone else's mind and then blown up again. And just like, it doesn't always get blown up into this perfect representation. Sometimes there's malware in there. Sometimes there's, you know, extraneous characters that just don't quite make sense. And like, then it's your job as the communicator to then comb back through that and be like, okay, relay to me what you understand. Yep. First 20 characters, great. Then we've got this string of things like here that doesn't quite make sense. We need to comb that out, plug something back in there, and just like continually support this understanding. That's why communication and just learning is a two-way street. Like, it's not this, you know, pour from the cup. Like, learning is just a greater and greater ability to interface with the world. And like, that is a communication thing. And I think just around the concept of learning, to keep it in mind, is because it gets put on this pedestal and you think that like, oh, I've learned these things, therefore, you know, I'm here and this person's here because like I know more than them. Which is like, at the end of the day, they're just connections in the brain. Like, they're just like, you know, you'll be a more valuable person if you can actually interface with that other person than counting how many neurons that you have in comparison to their connections. But maybe just like some points that were on top of mind that I thought I might like to highlight, because I don't remember the exact question, but I do want to make sure I say these, is you mentioned Martin's ambition, and I would like to just like highlight one of the things that make him really exceptional, is because we see ambitious people every day for the most part. Like, once JPS finds itself somewhere on the map, people are sort of, you know, messaging, showing up, doing whatever. Like, people want to be at JPS. And the thing that makes Martin, I think, incredible, because like everyone has ambitions, is that he's extremely receptive to feedback. Like, I don't want to say criticism, because like, in all honesty, like, he doesn't deserve that much criticism. Like, he, you know, he has that internal desire of taking care of his own business from that imposter syndrome, like that adaptive kind of, hey, maybe if I don't know this to the degree that I need to, I'm going to be found out. So I think that is the thing that, again, makes Martin really exceptional. And I think this goes to sort of Peter Thiel's point. He often speaks about that the most incredible people or successful or innovative or whatever have this zen-like balance of seemingly contradictory things. And I think this is something that Scott Barrett Kaufman talks about a little bit. I haven't actually read the book, but I've heard him speak on the topic.
I think you'd enjoy it.
And yeah, I've got it. So it's when I finally get through Nassim Taleb, which I'll circle back to. He makes that point that like sort of transcendence is like, it's not the that distinguishment between the self and the other. It's like, as you plug yourself into something more meaningful, more expansive over time, and just you realize that these, not the barriers don't exist, but you can transcend them. Like the seemingly incompatible can become compatible at once you reach a level of understanding. Like we see this in science. It's like there is seemingly incompatible results that once we actually have a greater understanding will be perfectly coherent. It's just that, as the sort of saying goes, like reality is not just, basically reality is not just more crazy than we suppose, it is crazier than we can suppose. I guess like that is the sort of the difficulty in finding answers to these questions. But as I was, to bring it back to the point, sorry, it's like Martin is ambitious, but also humble enough to take criticism or just like feedback. And that's incredible. And it's like, we see this with like polymaths, like they are analytical, but creative, and just like all these extremely different, seemingly contradictory skills. And I think the ability to develop those zen-like balances very much does come back to I'll be a bit sort of a spiritual guru-y here, but it's like you need to really calm that ego, because like if you've got that strong ego and you're consistently listening to, oh yeah, I'm getting 500, 1,000 likes on photos, I am loved, I am the man, I am the woman, or whatever. It's like, it doesn't need to be Instagram. It might be you're only talking to people who love your stuff. Then you get this inflated sense of like, yep, this is what makes me valuable. And you don't pay attention to the thing that would actually give you that zen-like balance and make you a truly, you know, enlightened person. Not the sort of enlightenment is this end goal, but when you're consistently leaning into the ego supporting information, you know, yeah, it'll be like that person becomes hyper ambitious. Oh, look at me, I'm so ambitious, I'm going to continue to be ambitious and blah blah blah. But they then don't pay attention to how well am I receiving feedback. And that's a good strategy for getting you ahead in the short to medium term, but it's those, you know, the cream rises to the top eventually. And I think it's those people that have pulled down those ego sort of walls, reflected internally and going, what is going to catch me out? What is the second side to this sword that might actually cut me in the long run? And I think this ties into your point, Austin, about being sort of found out. Like people get blindsided by these black swans, but they may not actually be black swans if you are actively paying attention to and seeking information that will highlight to you that they are there. But it's only when you sort of close off your worldview and it's just like all you end up putting in front of you is mirrors and just like, yep, look how great I am sort of a thing, that those eventually that mirror is ripped away and you're standing in front of 50 people and you know all of about 13 minutes worth of content and you've got to speak for an hour. That's super scary. And I really love Jordan Peterson's sort of thoughts on this, and he's not the first to say it, but he's like, you need to know about 5 times the amount of content for something than what you can speak on. It's like, if you've got to do an hour talk, you've got to know 5 hours. But I think this is where that sort of imposter syndrome and that like those somewhat malicious incentives are coming into it. People are like, oh, if I could just quickly grab enough stuff to do an hour long talk, I'll be able to post it on YouTube and I'll like, and then all of a sudden maybe that video goes well. So then they're scrambling to do another one by the next week. And all of a sudden they've dusted across all this information and not actually learned it. And I think so much of this actually just comes down to the time frames which we view life on. Like, I'm trying to take sort of the most long view on life and just like remain patient. And I don't do it perfectly. I'm not saying that, but that is something I'm consistently trying to remind myself of, because I think there is just a lot of damage to be done. In the short term, if we focus on that too much. And I think that was one more point I was going to say, but I forget now because
I've done. Well, let you think about it. Yeah, no. It's, I'm going on hour like 14 of my day here, and I'm losing thoughts by the I'm losing thoughts by the minute. But one thing I wanted to highlight on that point was, you know, that's something you touched on. Like, if you're going to do an hour presentation, you need to know 5 hours worth of content on that information. That's something that I've had to, as I'm working on this book, that's conversations I'm having with the editors is, you know, there's these certain deadlines that are sort of created, and I'm doing my damnedest to hit those deadlines, but there's a certain, if I got to write, and then there's this divide in understanding of how long something's going to take, right? Because it's like, I know you look, you created a video on this, like, write 500 words on this topic. If you ask me to write 500 words on a topic, I'm going to do about 6 hours worth of research to make sure those are the best 500 words, the most understood to the audience, the most understood to the current level of literature we have, the most understood. Like, I want the best. So I'm going to do 4 to 6 hours of research to probably write 2,000 words today. And then I'm going to do it again tomorrow, but I'm not going to hit your deadline. Like, and that's just the way it is. You know, I'm going to hit the end of deadline because I'll stay up for days to hit it. But if I, hopefully, I shouldn't get there by this point, but like, it's, that's something that you spoke to in that point, and that very much hit home. And I think it's so, so important. And, I mentioned earlier, like, I almost have this new, all this is information I've known at different times, but I'm writing a book. So that the book is The Science of Strength Training. And it's, I swear to you, on every topic under the sun that we could fit into a book. And so I'm having to do every day, I'm doing research on everything that's under the sun. You know, it's not a book on exercise technique. It's not a book on protein. It's a book on everything that has to do with strength training, which is a vast array of topics, right? And then there's things they want in there. There's things that I want to kind of wedge in there. And it's given me this, it's all these are things that I've known or read at one point or another. But over this last 6 months, I've had to just deep dive, resubmerge myself into this stuff. And with the wisdom I've been able to sort of put together through my first 6 years in this space, I'm learning this information as a new person. I'm learning this information as a new coach. I'm learning this information as a totally different individual with a new outlook on why I'm learning it and how I can share it. And that's, I was just, that's what I was mentioning of, like, I found this new sense of self-confidence within the, Martin mentioned kind of those four sectors of intelligence. And the one I have, I've always had a deep insecurity in is the paper intelligence. I failed pretty much every standardized test you've ever put in front of me. My elementary school, like the ones you took in elementary or primary school, failed every single one of those. The ones that you would, the I-STEP in terms of my case, what I would have taken in high school, nope, not a shot. My SATs, ACTs, I could not get into college with my SAT and ACT scores. Like, I've always been crippled by that metric. I've always been crippled by that category of intelligence. But I feel like I've excelled in the, let's say, the other three. And so I, in what we're taught, right, about intelligence is like, intelligence is, it's what's on the paper. It's what's on the test. It's what the facts and the figures that you can spit out. And so, you know, there's always, this is something that, in terms of talking about self-esteem, like in the Transcendence book, he kind of talks about this when you're reframing. So he's talking about inner city kids and reframing what we see and what we're celebrating in these lower income areas in terms of these levels of and these metrics of intelligence. It's like, these guys are and these men and women are going to be they're leaders. I mean, these guys have the most intelligence and would rank higher. And he brought up some research about these different levels of intelligence. And they did a study on the faculty at a university. And so they tested them on the level of recognition of facial response and empathy. And they put them up against the custodial staff that works at that university. And the custodial staff, with a high school education maybe at best, drastically outranked the academics' ability to, on that level of intelligence, like they, which we would call like, they're street smart. Like, they have the streets intelligence. Like, they got the intelligence that they thrive in, the intelligence like they needed in the periods of their life. And these levels of intelligence are so multifaceted. And I bring that up, one, because it was a revelation to me over the last, really the last few years, where I didn't find a sense of self-confidence within any form of intelligence until I started to sort of carve my own path at university. And I went from a lucky to get a C student to 4.0. I'm the guy you copy off of in class, which to me was like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I seem to this seems all fall into place. And I'm finding this new self, you know, I'm finding this new understanding of what intelligence can be. And I was then learning how to learn. So I was taking, right. So Martin was, you know, you're talking about using a skill set within one place of intelligence to grow the others. And so I then learned that I could use these other frameworks that I had built on emotional intelligence what were the other two that you mentioned?
Rational thinking and just aptitude.
Right. In which I feel like I'd always had a level of, in it, like in sports, I always had a very high aptitude and always had the ability to be very rational, in which when I was growing up was very annoying to most teachers, which was then labeled a smart ass and or a problem. So there you go.
Right.
And you know, I think we all can identify to that to some degree. But I want to bring that up just because I know some of us have experienced this. And I'll be the first one to tell you, like, I still battle with it. And it's something that I'm always kind of trying to work on, that imposter syndrome. You know, that's kind of my carrot that I'm chasing, of like, that's never been a strong suit of mine. But you can use the frameworks. We all have intelligence, you know, barring that you have the capacity for that intelligence. But if you're listening to this episode, I would assume you do. And use those other frameworks. Understand that you can use these other frameworks, the scaffolding that's been built within these other areas, to then bring up an area that you're very insecure about. And I'll be the first one to admit, someone who is introed onto podcasts as an intelligent person, like, I've never identified to be an intelligent person in the way that I always put out what intelligence meant. or how it was seen growing up. So, you know, that's not something I've ever really identified with, which is always hard for me. But I think it's, you know, I wanted to bring that up because if you're feeling that, then understand that one, that's malleable, like that can change. And it's going to continue to change. And I think there was a sense of self-belief that had to take me out of that. And that sense of self-belief for me didn't start until my first semester at university. When I went in, I signed up for the hardest one. My grandfather had to talk the admissions officer into letting me in the university because I didn't have the test scores to do it, because he was the assistant head coach at the football team, or was, and then retired. So he had a great relationship with the admissions officer. And so he talked him in, like, hey man, let this guy in, like, trust me. And basically went from not being able to get into college to taking the hard, I just signed up for the hardest classes I could take. And I came out of that experience with a 3.95, and then, you know, the rest is history. And it's like that took a sense of self-belief, and it took that moment, that trigger. It was that catalyst, essentially, that spark that, like, had to happen for myself, you know, to sort of start to be able to grow from the framework that was being built in these other areas that I never knew how to put together. And luckily, like, I get to have conversations with guys like you, you know, you guys who can bring up topics like that and, like, make connections in my mind, you know, sort of, we're sending back and forth these zip files, right? Like, we're just trying to as quickly to synthesize this information, to condense our thoughts, and all of these different things into something that's legible, and understandable, and that can be taken and then can be malleable to the person that's on the other end, in the receiving end. And that's kind of the whole point of these conversations that we have here, and that I'm grateful to have here. So yeah, I don't know where that was going, but I just wanted to say that.
Any comments, Marto?
I guess a question that I've been pondering recently, and this question is probably a good question to ask yourself if, you know, you're out there and you're experiencing the imposter syndrome and you're not sure where to go from here, but, like, what does it mean to be smart? I guess the answer to that question for me has changed over time and has probably been the defining factor for my progression and other areas of intelligence. So initially, you know, based off what I've said today, you know, you guys would probably guess or predict the answer to this question, what it was. And I, you know, I'd think of being smart as just knowing answers to questions, you know, sounding smart, you know, distributing lots of information. And once I started to come to the realization that, you know, hold on a second, being smart actually encompasses many other factors. And just because you sound smart and you distribute information doesn't actually mean you are. I started to pull towards the other areas of intelligence and try to foster them. So, for example, now to me, like, I feel like being smart is having the ability to, like, you know, change the way that other people think about things, not necessarily just telling them the answer to a question. And, you know, being able to distill the information in your head and provide people with what they need to know as opposed to what you want them to know. And I think, like I said, just defining my answer to that question and, I guess, clarifying it has allowed me to keep chasing, keep chasing my goals, and it has led me in the right direction. Whereas if I hadn't had come to that realization and just held the viewpoint of, you know, being smart means you need to, you know, have a database of knowledge in your head, you need to sound smart, you need to distribute, you know, smart sounding information, if I still held that viewpoint, I'm not sure if I would have progressed in this trajectory. And I feel like a lot of people probably get caught up with the answer to this question and never are never able to define it in the way that I have. And then obviously in that case, they are then, you know, moving in a direction that is like opposite to mine. And I see that in a lot of students, especially like students who are at university level, they're just chasing, you know, that knowledge, chasing that information. They want to sound smart, and they're never able to address the other facets of intelligence, which we've obviously spoken extensively about today. So I'm not sure, Lyndon, what do you, what's your, what are your thoughts surrounding that question? You know, what does it mean to be smart, and has it changed for you over time? Or
yeah, most definitely. I think you make some excellent points as always, Mardo, and I really like your previous dialogue as well, Austin. So not to gloss over that. I think there is some degree of relatedness between the two points you were speaking about, and the point I will make is Austin was speaking about, Scott Barry Kaufman's somewhat definition of intelligence, and I might be misrepresenting it here, but my understanding was it was something along the lines of like being able to understand and like operate effectively within your environment. I think he has
very contextual.
Like it's not just the paper. It's can you have a cognitive representation of what's going on around you, and how well can you interact and instrumentally operate, changing things, doing things as you want to? And I know he speaks about, he has a definition of creativity that sort of ties in there as well and whatnot. So I think how that links in with what you were saying, Mardo, was I think to me, for definitely on earlier parts of my trajectory, I wanted to be considered smart. And this was probably because there's the joke that we live the rest of our lives dealing with high school baggage. And I think to a degree, I was sort of that, like I was trying to prove myself. I was like, how can I establish myself as like, yeah, I didn't get good marks in school either. Yeah. How, like people told me I had ability, but like it's not there. So I was like, okay, I need to either prove it to myself or prove it to others, or whatever it was, I wanted to be considered smart. So that's probably, that really guided the first few years of myself in the industry. But I think I have definitely pulled back from that, and has changed, as you were saying, Mardo, your analogy about the river, like your metaphor and just like your view on life should certainly change. And now I think I wouldn't necessarily say intelligence is a goal, because as we were sort of saying, Austin, it is contextual. But I will have acted intelligently if I can live out my values. I think I will say that. So for me personally, it really does tie into, as you were saying, Mardo, having those values in your life that should guide, and or that North Star, that analogy you like, Austin, of like being something to aspire to. And for me personally, the metaphor that comes to mind is I want to be basically a stable basis or port of information, or bit of a guiding basis for the people that I really respect. Like I would much rather have a small sort of circle of people or following or things like that, but I'm the person that say someone like yourself, Austin, somewhat looks to, or Luke is like another one who sort of we're relatively frequently in touch. And like I'm not saying those are the only people that I care about, but like my family, like I want to be that kind of that real stability of like, and the way I kind of think about it is like, I want to be out past the waves where the waves are breaking. Like there's so much like movement in the industry, and it's just like, as you were saying, it's just like, it's keto and then it's this or it's that. And it's so hard to get your bearings when you're being tumbled around in whitewash and waves going in and out. But I want to be that person that's sort of like sitting out past where the waves are breaking, and just like I can tell whether the tide is rising or going out. Like, it's that trying to ground yourself in what is the underlying, like, what is the deeper, what is the true here? Like, and where's the sort of the signal in the noise? So I guess that's sort of, that is what I'm going for, in all honesty, Mardo. And I don't think that's, I'm entirely conceptualizing it as intelligence. And I'm not suggesting that you were sort of saying that's the peak variable or thing to monitor, but it is, I will have considered myself acting intelligently if I can live that out. And that requires, you know, not just a degree of intellectual intelligence, but it's intelligence of character and integrity. And it's, to a degree, communication. It's lived experience. It's what I mean by that is, like, upholding integrity and character in challenging times. Like, there's so much of that. Yeah, it's all good and well to have integrity when things are going well, but, like, I forget which book this is in, but it's basically like, yeah, on a good day, a serial killer doesn't kill people. Like, but you can't measure people based on their good days. Like, it's what does that person do on their worst day? And I think that takes some serious, you know, self-reflection, but not to sort of go too far down that path. Something I would maybe round this out with is, there's a few things. Because intelligence is sort of contextual, as we've spoken about it, you don't want to become hyper-concerned with finding the right environment to plug yourself into. I think that is certainly important, but recognize there is value to be obtained from any environment. And I think this sort of goes back to the earlier point that we were discussing about like how Martin and I arrived at JPS. But the thing is like JPS, like, and not to discredit Sam or Jacob at all, like, they've done a fantastic job with what they've done, but it's like JPS wasn't what it was. You know what I'm getting to.
Isn't what it was.
Yeah, it isn't what it is now, or it wasn't what it is now. That's the one.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It reminds me of Big Bang Theory, when Sheldon and Leonard haven't had, and they're like, yeah, at the whiteboard, and they're,
yeah,
haven't had gone, and they're like trying to figure out. Yeah, sorry. Man. Keep going. We get it. Yeah.
Sheldon is one of the greatest characters on TV. I love him,
dude. How he executed that character. You know, I really liked your piece on rationality and sort of your marks on the rational thought from, you know, Sheldon's character. But you can't, I know you're not doing this, but one of the greatest, like, characters played out in television history, like how that was executed every single episode is brilliance on a scale that I have trouble a lot of times comprehending, which I think is why I appreciate watching that show so much.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And not to lose the point, but yeah, the point I was making obviously in that article is he is not a good representation of rationality, but he is a phenomenal TV character. And those two things are somewhat mutually exclusive. The point I was getting to is a lot of people, and they probably do this to a degree with you as well, Austin, about like, oh, yeah, but he went to MI40 and but this and that. And it's like, the thing is like what you see of JPS now isn't what it was when we came to it. It's just like, there's a lot of this, the grass is greener on the other side. And I sort of, it's a bit of that cliche follow up, but like the grass is greener where you water it. It's like Martin and I, and it, like, so everyone else, like not just us, but, we had a vision. We wanted to build things. And even if it wasn't ideally what we wanted, it was like, well, this is what we're operating with. Like, how can we make this better? And I think that's what everyone needs to learn to do in their own environment. It's like, yeah, over time, you might want to look for better and better environments so you can level up to a greater and greater extent. But don't be that person who's not learning from those around you. because you want to find an even better mentor to learn from. Like, I think it was Emerson who basically said, like, every man is my superior in one way or another. Like, you can learn from everyone. And I think that is a really important point. So, like, acting intelligently is gathering the amount of, well, like, maximizing the amount of intellect that you can gather from those around you. And the final thing I'll say on this is there's a bit of a Matthew principle that I think operates here. And I think something that, and why I really always encourage coaches to consider themselves as teachers and educators and to learn more about the science of learning. It's obviously a passion project of mine, but it is through that, I think that is the process that teaches us so much, like it, or just the process of writing a book or having to craft a presentation or give a workshop, that you actually learn so much. And because those that start out on a slightly, you know, oh, this person shows a bit of aptitude, so we'll get him to write a book, we'll get him to give the presentation. And then all of a sudden that's a self-perpetuating process. That person learns more from it. And as I was saying, it's a Matthew effect. So I think you can tap into that if you do those two things that I was sort of recommending, is like learn to learn from everyone around you and then force yourself to present, educate, teach, do whatever, like create, I think is the crux of it. Because storing knowledge for knowledge's sake is nothing more than sort of, again, the stroking of your own ego. Like, knowledge is supposed to be a recipe to construct things and do things with the external world. So do make sure you're interacting with it to a degree.
I think it's a beautiful ending point. Martin, do you want to have any closing remarks on that point?
I think that's a great way to finish off, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought that was beautifully put. And I think what kind of the thought that came in mind as you were speaking on intelligence specifically was, you know, intelligence isn't this destination that we're always told it is. It's intelligence is the actions we're living by every single day, and actions we're choosing to live by every single day. And that's, again, I'm fortunate to speak to guys like you and to people like you both, and that I'm able to have on this medium, which is a big part of why I selfishly started the podcast. But also, like, why I think it's important to have these conversations and these long form, nuanced conversations where we're able to have time to hash these things out. And just like we'd have this conversation if it was us three in a room chilling, you know, I mean, there'd be some other shit we talk about, I'm sure, but like, you have the time. You know, I think a lot of what we hear communicate, and I think why I identify so much with the Rogan Experience and the way that he hosts that podcast is there's the long form sense of, this is how this person interacts with the world. This is who this person is. And we exist in a culture of sound bites and very, very short snippets of information. And it's really hard to get to know someone. And it's really hard to give someone the time to speak their mind on a topic. And I think too, I often feel slighted. I'm someone who very much needs time to talk through it. And there's probably within a 5-minute spiel, there's probably 30 seconds that you would take as a soundbite and say, like, this was great. But I needed the 5 minutes to get there, right? Like, that's not what came to, like, that's not the first thing in our minds. Like, and if it is, then is that the best thing that could have been said? Or is that something you even considered or thought about, right? And that's kind of the irony of what we see is, or what we reward as kind of being that North Star in that regard. So I appreciate both of you guys' time. I will, to save you both, like the common spiel of your social medias, like I'll say in the intro where everyone can find you. And what I want to kind of give you guys the floor for those of you who are, this will be a two-parter, so people will still be listening by this point. I want to kind of give you both the floor to kind of explain the portal and explain a really cool opportunity for people at a very, very low cost, to be honest. And I know they missed out on the launch pre-sale party, but they can still hit it up. And it's still something that I identify JPS from an outsider's perspective as the guys putting together some of the best zip files around. And I know you guys, as you guys all are maturing, as I'm observing, the more and more, like, not that there's never been original thought, I don't want to come out that way, but there was a sense of, we're going to gather up and synthesize all the information that's out there and then present it. And now more and more, with every post, with every presentation, with every piece of content that comes out, I'm like, that's a new spin. That's a new one. Like, that's a new perspective on that. You're taking your zip, you know, you're creating that zip file, but you're putting some spice on it. You're putting some JPS spin on it, and I'm digging it. And I think this, again, I think this education portal is, again, one of the best zip files around, to really get exposed to good work and good information. So I want to kind of give you, either whoever wants to talk, kind of mention it and talk about it, just do it.
Yeah, I guess I can kick it off. So I guess you mentioned, you know, Austin, our purpose with the portal was to extract, you know, information from, because an everyday person, you know, looking for information in the fitness industry is obviously going to struggle for many reasons. You know, how do I know who to believe? You know, where should I search? What websites should I go for? With the education portal, what we've done is we've extracted, you know, all the information that we believe to be quite reliable, and we have then presented it in various forms to cater for many individuals. So, you know, we've got the lectures, we've got some heavy theoretical lectures, we've got more practical lectures, we've also got articles as well. And we have like weekly fitness knowledge bombs, which are like summaries of like research papers or YouTube videos. So what we're trying to do, like I said, is to cater to the wide population of just health and fitness enthusiasts who just want to learn more about fitness. So, you know, you don't have to be a coach, you don't have to be someone who wants to learn this science in a very like in-depth manner. You just need to be someone who is willing to learn. And if you are willing to learn, then there's a lot you can take away from the portal. And I'm sure you could resonate with, you know, some of the information and the content that we put out on the portal. So Don, if you want to just expand on that.
Yeah, I honestly think you guys have covered it to a significant sense. Very well, it's very gratifying and very nice of you to say all those things, Austin. So thank you for that and giving us this opportunity to speak about it. I think Martin outlined it pretty well. We have tried to make create information that is varied in both how it is presented and what is presented. Like, I think we recognize that there is importance to like variation in training programs, but then we go and consume this highly specific sources of information, and then our brain breaks when it's confronted with, you know, anything lateral or non-specific to what we've been consuming. So I think it's really good that we have found, I guess, a number of presenters, and it won't just be the four of us. There will be sort of more brought into the fray at times. But we have these people that are sort of hopefully guided by relatively similar and accepted values and principles, but we all sort of like triangulate and circulate the information in slightly different ways. And my perspective on it is different from Martin's, which is different from Jacob's and Jackson's. And at times there's disagreement, and the disagreement comes from people having different perspectives. And there is, I think, there's obviously value in that, because there is a blind spot in every single spot that you stand. So like, yeah, there are definitely places in the world or like intellectually that you can stand and have a better view of things, but ultimately every spot has a blind spot. So you need, I think, a good team around you to help fill in those. And yeah, I guess that's probably the thing I'll say. And I guess maybe the success of the portal to a degree, or based on your interpretation of the JPS spin, Austin, is very much from us trying to take down those echo chamber barriers. Like, I'm not sure exactly what sort of drives this process. Like, you could make the claim that it's somewhat even commercial in aspect. It's like you want to be able to talk to a bigger and bigger audience. So when you want to do that, you need to ensure that your medium is more generalizable, I guess, or you can communicate to different people. And when you can communicate with different people, you can hear different things in the opposite direction. Like, it's not just information going out, but because we're talking to new people are talking to us, and we're learning new things and looking at different perspectives. And I think that's how things grow and evolve and develop and become better, whether it be a service like the portal or just ourselves as individuals. So yeah, maybe that sort of, if you think the portal is something successful and worth checking out, and I'm speaking to the audience here, then hopefully that also is a strike or a tick next to that point of, yeah, checking out people outside of your echo chamber if you can find them. So there's typically value there.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say the most of what I'm consuming, I wouldn't necessarily categorize you guys outside of my echo chamber by any extent, but I've recently signed, for the last two courses I've done outside of kind of what I needed to do, just out of my own curiosity or expansion as a coach or an educator, they're all from people out of my echo chamber. And I've spent years of my career outside of at least the echo chamber that we kind of all coexist within, in which I think we all have a goal of existing outside of that echo chamber, but we can't help but to exist within the echo chamber that is fictitiously given. But it's sort of, I think it's all of our goals to exist outside of that and to appeal to the general, and not the general to the sense that there's a slight toward the general, but more to the extent that the general is our goal. The general is the 99% of individuals who are missed. And I'd say that's where I really identify with you guys and why I like you guys a lot, is I went from spending most of my career to how do I educate the 1% to now I'm only focused on the 99.
Yeah, I think that's it's like the point, I guess. And yeah, you can't make getting outside of your echo chamber like the entire guiding principle or way you operate, because typically you see value in what your echo chamber has to offer. Like, you can't be going, oh, I'm generally in this sphere of science, the science echo chamber, which, extends beyond the, say, even just evidence-based fitness echo chamber. And then be going, yeah, but what am I missing that science isn't telling me, sort of thing? Because like, for the most part, science is going to be the thing that does help you find out. Like, it's not super helpful to go and read astrology and then go to a fortune teller and things like that. To a degree, there are things out there. And I guess probably the the point I was generally getting at is a point that Taleb sort of makes. He's like, the most valuable books are the ones that you haven't read, or the, you know, it's that unlibrary, as he says at the start.
Is it unlibrary, anti-library, or
anti-library? Sorry, that's right. It's the anti-library, and I think that's probably the point I'm getting at, because, and my opinions on this matter are very much influenced by the people that I interact with. That's the thing. We get lots of people coming to us because they are, I guess, and it's lovely that they are, but extremely avid supporters of JPS and the things they put out. And it's sort of, it might be, you do want like people coming back, because that's a sign that you're doing something well. But at a certain point, like 3, 4, 5, say like JPS seminars, and then it's like they're listening to all these other people that are very, very close to JPS and their views. And like, and it's not to say that we are, anyone is wrong in their views, but it's also just try to find some of that anti-library, that anti, like what is being said outside of this, because we're definitely missing things too. So we don't want to actively, or not that it would be intentional to misguide or mislead anyone, but for your own sake and the due diligence on your own behalf, and just to ensure that, you know, we're not doing you a disservice, do look elsewhere as well. Yeah.
And I've learned, again, most of my career has been defined by spending the time outside of my echo chamber, spending my time outside of this echo chamber. And I think where I'm hopefully valuable to this echo chamber is because of the time I spent outside of it. What I can bring from a very nuanced perspective, in which I think in the beginning was met with a lot of blowback on, like, whether it's exercise execution, the nuances within that, creating tension, the importance of a few different things that I have hit on for the last 3 years very extensively. I think is fine. It's, you know, we're reaching a point where it's like there's dots being connected now with, you know, and a lot of the nuanced stuff that I learned outside of the echo chamber, and sort of what my goal is to kind of bring it back to these points that we, you know, as a tribe, like we miss things, you know, we miss connecting the dots. And I think, you know, like the next course I'm taking is, blood markers and advanced kind of blood chemistry course. And, you know, and then the big thing that we're working on as a company is diving in more to understanding, better understanding hormones, better understanding blood work, better understanding all of these things. And, you know, there's a lot to be understood beyond the caloric deficit. Especially if you're working with people who are seemingly broken to a degree. And a lot of times they're broken because their training's broken. Their stress management's broken. They're not broken. Their inputs are broken. And so a lot of time, like we start with better periodization, better programming, better potentiation, better deloading, better recovery, better stress management, more quality nutrition. Like we're starting with all these foundations, right? But I'd be lying to say if we haven't seen a difference in tracking these metrics, in which, and within our, you know, our chamber, aren't really looked at too often. Or if they are, it's kind of like, oh, that's pseudoscience. Like, oh, that doesn't matter. Like, it's just this that matters. And it's like, dude, if that was the case, why are the people that I see as very, very, very bright, who I see as also having integrity and they're honest, like, I don't think they're just trying to just sell this, you know, on the black market, man. Like, that's not the case here. And, you know, eventually the echo chambers catch up with one another. And I think hopefully one day when our world finds peace and John Lennon can sort of resurrect, it's a matter of these echo chambers sort of aligning, you know, and we all find peace, but that's probably not going to happen. But it's a matter of communication will get better and better. And it's important, as you said, to spend time outside that echo chamber. And it's important to, you know, I think like how I see this, you know, I see this with JPS. I see this with 3DMJ. I see this with Revive. And you see it with like RP, you know, with like Israetel and those guys. You know, you guys, like you were mentioning, Lyndon, you know, you have people who just keep showing up. And then they consume your first cousins and your second cousins. And they just keep going on the family tree of the same sort of information. Martin, so that's kind of what we were talking about there. And the importance of what can be learned, even from a thought process perspective of, man, all right, well, I understand this stuff. So let me detach from this. Go over here where this, what I've been learning hasn't really been talking too much about it. What can I take from that? You know, and obviously you have to approach that subject, you know, is this science driven? Do they have references? Let me look into some of these. Well, at least that seems legitimate. Okay, like this is a good representation of this area. Okay, like that kind of switches that light bulb on of, well, damn, okay, this could be a big component to where it's kind of working in this knowledge base now. And, or there's just rational, you know, there's a lot of rational thought and logic behind it, you know, which is just incredibly important. And I found, honestly, some of the most enjoyable times for me is being able to spend time outside of the echo chamber, you know, that echo chamber, and be able to come back, you know, because I think people feel like, you know, you're going to be this Socrates character, or, you know, one of these stoic beings who are exiled from their empires, essentially, to some degree, right? And then they may be admitted back in, or then they're executed, right? Like, you just feel like you're just going to be written off. But that's not the case. And especially if you stay within a sane mind and you're bringing value and you're, again, you're choosing to act with intelligence and character and integrity and honesty, and you're level-headed, you know, you come to the table with level-headedness and are open to the conversation, and you can listen and you can understand. I think it takes all of it to keep things progressing forward. And I know the three of us here absolutely want that to keep happening. So for those listening, we're going to wrap this up here, but I really wanted to get that point across. You know, and I think just to really round out what we've been talking about today, and the importance of having conversation, the importance of experiencing, the importance of being able to step outside what you know and what gives you comfort, to then be able to synchronize and to create lateral connection. To the greater point of what's kind of the goal of all of this to begin with. And that's to be a vehicle, be that for someone who's coming to you because they're confused or insecure, or they feel a lack of power in their own life. Being there, you know, you're a coach. And that plays off, even if you're a friend, you're a friend to someone, you're a son or a daughter to someone, you're something to someone. And all those character points matter in all those chambers, if you will. They matter in all those situations. So thank you both. I give you, if you guys have any closing remarks, please do say them. But thank you so much for both of your time. I already have an idea of topic of conversation for another one that I think would be really fun. But I just wanted to say thank you. And I really hope people enjoyed this and incredibly grateful for your time.
Thank you for having us.
You should definitely keep doing whatever you are doing, Austin. You're a good man. And I do look forward to spending more time with you in the flesh in the future.
Too kind.
But I just, it was something I believed already, but it was very evident to me just again the other day listening to that podcast. And you were like, I want to be that guy that, or it's like, not you want to be that guy, but it's like, I'm happy to be that guy who takes the hit because I post thumbnails on my videos. It's just like, it might not be the most optimal strategy but it's like, hey, this is how I can help people and this is how I can do things. And as I said, I think the cream rises to the top eventually. And I love what you're about. I love what you're doing. And I can't speak for both of us, but I would be extremely confident that Martin has appreciated and enjoyed his time here as much as I have. So, thank you again.
No doubt. Really enjoyed that.
Hey guys, Austin here. Thank you again for listening into the episode. It means a lot. If you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review. This does help us grow and be found by others. Also, just wanted to mention, if you guys are interested in free education based around training and nutrition, be sure to check out physiquedevelopment.com/free education, where you'll find free downloads, videos, articles, etc. No strings attached. Again, thank you. Chat soon.